Well, it's a pleasure to welcome back Peter Grandich of Peter Grandich & Company. He's been a friend of the show now for almost 13 years. Welcome back, Peter.
Chris, always a pleasure. You're one of the few people I make the time to speak with at this point in my life, and I enjoy it always.
We really appreciate that because it's what keeps people coming back to the show and the pre-talk. You're not terribly pleased with U.S. equities, and you like gold. Tell us more, please.
I entered this week with the, personally, and this is for myself, and just because it's for me, it may not be for someone else listening, but for my own self, I entered this week with the biggest short position in the U.S. equities I ever had. And as we speak here Thursday afternoon, June 21st, I now have the largest gold and mining share position dollar-wise that I ever had in my life.
Your thinking seems to be somewhat parallel with a lot of our guests lately. We've had folks concerned about the trade war. They just ratcheted up again this week, another $200 billion in tariffs levied against our top trade partner in Asia, added to the list, the EU recently, and of course our neighbors, Mexico, Canada. So that's one thing that has people concerned. Others are just the basic fact that we have rising rates and, you know, a higher rate cycle combined with the fact that we might see an inversion of the yield curve as soon as 2019 with gusto. That, of course, doesn't tend to bode well for equities. Why don't we start off with U.S. shares and give us your thinking there?
Trade wars and rising interest rates are part of the reason why I'm so bearish. But perhaps even more important to me and what drove me to the position I've taken is that the punch bowl is being removed across the world. Central banks, as we all know, have been, only way I describe it, madmen, by creating tens of trillions of dollars of debt, thinking that was the way to solve and get out of the previous financial crisis, which I believe when the next one comes will even be bigger than the last one. But nevertheless, while they had their foot on the pedal to the metal, it was all systems go for the financial markets. But we now see that in the United States that's no longer the case. Europe has announced it's taken its foot off the pedal. Japan is looking to take its foot off the pedal, and its statistics now show that China has already taken its foot off the pedal. And without the punch bowl, equities are in a very, very dangerous position. All the valuation things that you would use either are at record highs or near. Yes, the game is somewhat different because high-frequency trading and computers drive the markets. But what people have to understand is those programs will easily flip when the time comes to flip. There's not going to be any personal reason not to go short once the momentum stuff stops. And in the most recent days, really the life of the stock market has been in the most speculative end, the NASDAQ, and the single biggest part of that is the narrowness among a handful of stocks, and that there's been perhaps the biggest short squeeze ever in the most shorted stocks. So without that, I think we're very, very vulnerable to at least a severe correction, if not the beginning of a major bear market. And that's the motivation for me to want to be, you know, aggressively short, which is gambling. And Wall Street likes to use the word speculating instead of having to use the word gambling. But I'm gambling or speculating on that this is a key turning point, and I've decided on my own personal stuff to take the largest short position I ever had in my life.
Over the last 35 years, our trade partners have been recycling dollars. We buy their product cheap. They take those dollars, recycle them back into U.S. treasuries. And as a result, we've had this 35, 38-year strong bull market, obviously, in treasuries, along with surprisingly low interest rates. Many top folks, including the former bond king, said that we could be seeing an end here. And that would be a sea change event that would obviously usher in a period where things just turn upside down and even the pros are caught off guard.
Well, you're absolutely right. There's never been more of a lightning rod, certainly in my lifetime, on the political end than what Donald Trump has turned out to be. You're either very for him or you're very against him. There's no middle of a road. But one of the things I think he has pointed out is that trade has been very, very unfair and manipulated. He's taken what would be considered a very brash tax to what he thinks to rectify it. But it's certainly been an avenue where you're correct that so many of these dollars that have gone over, especially like to China, you know, have then been sent back to us by through their purchases of treasuries and other things. But the difficulty for China now is, and you know, if you can just look past the U.S. stock market for a moment, if I didn't have the chart of the U.S. stock market and I brought you charts of several emerging markets that we were told were going to be great and China and all, you would say the world was in either in a bear market or approaching bear market. So the United States has been the exception to the rule, and one of the reasons it's been the exception to the rule here is that nowhere is more is high-frequency trading dominating the markets than it is here right now. But that is going to turn around, in my opinion, and become the devil's advocate when the things go bad. And so I just, like I said, I really just feel, you know, I've been at this almost 35 years, and a lot of it comes many times to feeling still, even though you may have charts or computer programs and all that tell you. And, it, you know, you really, I don't know how better things could be, but there's so much room for things just to fall a peg or two, and then I just think there's no support underneath it. So it's a speculation slash gambling for me, but I feel it's a worthy opportunity at this point in time.
There's certainly ample evidence to suggest you're right. Way back in graduate school, we had to try to find what were the peer-reviewed journal opinions on what really is correlated with the U.S. equities market. In other words, are there any indicators that really give you a forward or a predictive glimpse into the future, what economists would refer to as a leading indicator? The one that was off the charts, some people would call it a coincidental indicator. It really had some leading attributes. The price-to-earnings ratio on the S&P 500. And I think you alluded to this, you didn't say it per se, but the price-to-earnings ratio is just completely out of whack. And we all know that markets can remain irrational much longer than short sellers can remain solvent. The neat thing is today you have this amazing leverage with options, so you can take a tiny amount of your wealth and speculate, if you will, speculare. Just looking at this one metric that we found to be one of the best, then, you know, you would be making, at least in the long term, I don't know about this week, next month, we are most certainly in uncharted waters. Another indicator we found was the interest rate cycle is just closely tied. The Fed's overnight lending rate, FOMC's cycle, is highly correlated with these cycles within the S&P. As they lower rates, we have equity strength, and as rates start to rise, well, within about a year or so, year and a half, you start to see a weaker market. And we're getting close to that. You know, they've been raising rates, I think you'd agree, for a little over a year now. So we could be reaching that point if history is a guide here, if it actually plays out. So let's move on to the precious metals, you know, just stuck in the doldrums. We've had some pretty sharp folks, though, say that there's just never been a bargain buying opportunity like they see now. Do you agree?
My reason for taking such a large position, literally as we speak, was done this morning based on valuations, especially vis-a-vis other vehicles that I could look at. I can't say why gold hasn't done this or that, and it should have done this or that. But if I just stop and I look, okay, I have choices. Should I buy bonds here? Is there room for me? Or better yet, what kind of risk do I have? I mean, you know, when we're down at 2 and 3% yields, and even if they go up to 4, it doesn't sound like a lot, but that's a 33% loss. I look at stocks, as we just spoke, in every metric you can look at, comparing valuations historically, what have you, there's certainly nothing cheap about it, and arguments can be made it could be the most expensive market that's been in existence. Then when I compare it to gold and its relative values, and particularly now something that I haven't looked at in the last few years but have now dramatically increased my exposure, the mining shares, and I'm talking about the mining, not the pure exploration companies. The valuations there, especially in an industry where I don't like to use that word peak gold or what have you, but there's certainly been several years of declining expansion on the exploration front, which is leading towards less and less future production, just set up for, I think those people you referred to are right. I mean, is it going to turn tomorrow? No. Can it go somewhat lower still? Yes. But if there's anyone still investing in multiple of years still, because it seems like when you watch the talking heads, they're investing just for the next few hours, the valuations in gold when compared to other investment vehicles are just compelling. It's just, you just have to do it. And listen, at the greatest buying opportunities, it didn't look that way. That's why they ended up being the greatest buying opportunities. And that's what, to me at least, gold and silver look like at this point in time. And now the mining shares, because of how many years of neglect and lack of interest and what have you, are actually as compelling as the metals themselves. So I made sure to split my exposure basically evenly between the gold itself and mining shares.
From a statistical standpoint, you've certainly made a wise decision there, because there is no better alternative to equities that balances the portfolio. I think of it as a free lunch that Markowitz teaches us, a seminal mathematical breakthrough. Gold and silver, they offset some of the risk that you see and many of our top guests see in U.S. equities, kind of a free ride. And then you have the added benefit of knowing you have something more tangible, a non-paper asset. It helps, I think, investors have that added peace of mind. You also talk about gold equities. We see a lot of opportunity here. As most our listeners know, the equities, gold equities, have not participated in this remarkable decade-long rally in the S&P 500, the NASDAQ, and the Dow. That could be the go-to place as investors start to maybe take some profits off the table, curtail their enthusiasm, start looking for something that could benefit as other shares decline.
Sure, I think it's clearly a contrarian play. I think what you noted about the tech stocks, you know, off the scales, the FANGs especially, and the total neglect to the mining, as long as the equity market doesn't collapse overnight and some of that money's obviously going to siphon its way out, it doesn't take a lot to push the tilt towards demand for these shares. You know, even listening, and I don't live and sleep gold the way I did when I worked within the metals and mining industry, and I'm in my fifth year of that now, but I still keep an ear to, and I've spent a good part of the last month really delving into where was the investment community towards the metals. And to my shock almost, people that I used to share the stage with at every show for decades said the same thing: buy gold, hate the stock market. Buy gold, hate the stock market. Even those people have lessened their voices, even to the point of, you know, talking about maybe gold is dead, or others that I used to hear saying that maybe currencies are the answer. All the signs of throwing the towel in are evident. And like I said at the onset, when I compare that to valuations, if I wanted to play in any other arena, it's a no-brainer. I don't think it happens tomorrow. I don't think it's suddenly I'll be shown to be smart in a day or a week, a month, or maybe even a year. But if someone still invests for multiple years now, the valuations on gold are important. And I think another point that actually drove me through is knowing where production costs now are for the major mining companies, there's really not going to be a likelihood of gold getting below 1,000 and staying there, because basically most mining will stop around the world. Very few will be able to operate at that point in time. And there isn't that big of an overwhelming supply of gold that's just sitting. Everybody has bought in the last few years. Now they're throwing in the towel. So the risk to me look 10% down and 50 to 100% up. So That's anything. If you told me that was about tea leaves, I'd be long tea leaves right now. But I just think the gold market and things related to it now offer the best opportunity for capital gains going forward.
Well, I'll see your forecast and raise it a bit further. We've had numerous guests on the show, several come to mind, maybe the best being John Williams of ShadowStats.com fame, points out, yeah, maybe 10% on the downside risk or so, you know, you never know for sure, that a U.S. dollar that's worthless is kind of like 1 divided by 0. Math majors will say, well, that doesn't make sense, it's a non sequitur. To the rest of us, that's infinity. So if a true currency crisis erupts, and here's the case in point, you may have read Egon von Greyerz's paper. He's in Switzerland. He investigated Venezuela, the Venezuelan Bolivar. He shows a graph that he created, and the Bolivar, in terms of 1 ounce of gold, went from nearly parity with the U.S. dollar, you know, like around 1,300 Bolivars, to 75 million Bolivars per ounce of gold. in about 2 months' time. It's social unrest on an epic scale. What if something came to your shores, to your country, similar in a very brief period of time? So as we wrap up today, do you see that there could be a moment where things just spiral out of control that catches all but the most insightful off guard?
You know, you can never say never in our business, and those who have done it long since regretted that they have. I think we may not get the crashes that we once had because of some of the systems that have been in place that at least curtail computers from, just taking everybody out and shot in a few minutes. What I do think what people are not prepared for is that they've gotten this mentality of, you know, you always buy the dip. You know, I'm going into my 35th year in and around the financial arena, and I see still in the work that I do, although it's basically planning and planning with people, you know, 55 and over, and not really interested. They're not interested in turning a dollar into 10, but they're just trying to preserve and protect what they already have. And they meet with so-called younger financial advisors, and no disrespect, but I was there once myself. And they just have never lived an experience where markets just don't rebound right away or just keep going up. In fact, I saw a statistic out that two-thirds of the financial advisors in the business in the U.S. that are licensed, something like 10 years or less. So even a lot of them didn't even experience the last financial crisis. And so where I think we run into trouble, Chris, is that the lack of experience during what might have been a rough bear market, but it wasn't the end of the world, will seem like the end of the world to a lot of people responsible for money. And that in itself may lead to what you spoke about. So, yeah, those are concerns. I wouldn't lose sleep over those concerns, but I think you have to keep on guard that that's always a possibility.
One of my family members, he would say, never confuse brains with a bull market. He had that tattooed everywhere in his offices, and you know, everyone who worked with him, you know, they were just like, yes, Sterling, we know the story. This really ties in with your idea that maybe very few of the top professionals, because they feel like geniuses right now. They're young hot shots. So those contingency plans can come in handy. As we wrap up, can you tell people more about Greenwich and Company and all the neat stuff people can find there?
Chris, so Peter Greenwich, GRANDICH.com is the website. It's really self-explanatory there. There are two blogs. There's a blog called Greenwich Markets, and that's where I just talk about things related to financial markets. And then there's one, Pete Speaks, and that's everything other than financial markets. And if one likes either one or both, they simply put in an email address, and whenever we write something, by sometime in that evening, you'll receive an email alert noting that there's something up on the blog. We don't know who you are. We don't distribute the email addresses to anybody else and all. And everything, that, if any interest on people, the only thing I will say is our clientele is limited to the United States. We only work with people that are residing in the United States.
And I'd like to also toss in here, and I don't do this lightly, Peter Greenwich is the only advisor, 13 years now, doing this every week for 13 years, that Goldseek Radio stands by and endorses. By the way, 0% kickback for that. One of the few people you can trust in this industry. And he's earned that trust. Thank you.
Chris, always a pleasure. Bye-bye.